Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Is it you or is it the drugs? That's going to be a question that's going to be coming more and more to our attention, because right now, the use of drugs as enhancements for performance and ability, well, they're reaching far beyond the ballpark where the issue of anabolic steroids has been a problem, to the use of drugs like Adderall and Benzedrine in the classroom, where students are beginning to take some of these drugs in order to enhance their cognitive abilities and sharpen their memory. And soon we are told that designer drugs and over-the-counter medications may be available to help you just about solve any problem or enhance any ability that you might imagine. We're going to be talking today about how we should consider this from a Christian worldview perspective, how we should understand the challenge of human enhancement, whether it's coming from nanotechnology and steroids or whether it's coming from other forms of pharmaceuticals or technologies. These are not right now just science fiction questions. They're questions that are being asked by some kids and by athletes and others as they consider what they must do in order to make the cut or to make the grade. That coming up in the second segment. First, a review of some issues in the news. What is free speech? Well, the Supreme Court of Oregon has decided that free speech includes live sex acts. In a decision that really eclipsed and was overlooked by the national imagination in recent weeks, on September the 29th, the Oregon Supreme Court handed down two decisions that ruled that live sex acts were constitutionally protected forms of free speech. Now, Oregon has, along with the Pacific Northwest, a reputation for being more secular. But in this case, we also understand that Oregon's laws really stretch the idea of free speech far beyond what anyone could imagine that the United States Constitution would be intended to hold. And in fact, the Oregon State Constitution appears to go beyond the United States Constitution in offering such issues. Now, there is just so much here, but one of the things that I particularly want us to note is that when you begin to transform behavior into what is considered constitutionally protected free speech, you've really crossed some kind of line. Now, can we imagine for just a moment that the Victorian founders, that means the Victorian era, the founders of that day of the state of Oregon, when they adopted this constitution, imagined that it would ever be interpreted by judges so as to mean that there could be no laws preventing or prohibiting live sex acts as entertainment? Well, obviously not. But you see why the courts are so important, and you see how these constitutional texts become elastic documents for judges to twist any direction they want to go. Now, there were two decisions handed down, and this leads to some confusion, because if the first decision struck down laws that would have prevented live sex acts, and they did so because they said it was constitutionally protected free speech, the second law said that the state could prohibit prostitution. Now, would you be surprised to know that the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon is right in the thick of this? Now, from the Oregonian, the Portland newspaper, I want to read you this. Dave Fittenke, executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon, said the ruling properly distinguished between legitimate expression, that is performing, and illegal conduct, which is having sex for money. Quote, that should alleviate a lot of the concerns that any Oregonians might have about how far things might go, he said. This is nuts. This is supposed to alleviate any concerns on the part of Oregonians about how far this law may go. If it has already gone to the point that live sex acts on stage are considered a constitutionally protected form of free speech, it's gone beyond sanity. Well, there is so much out there that should really demand our attention, but I want to give you a piece of good news, and it comes from the United Methodist Church. It's one of those cases that really draws our mind to the gravity of what we face. What we face in this generation is an attempt to overthrow biblical authority, an attempt on issues of human sexuality to normalize homosexuality, and to do so on a multi-front approach that would include, for instance, normalizing homosexual marriage and same-sex relationships, normalizing homosexual parenting and adoption, and normalizing homosexual images and relationships in the public. And one of the normalizations they really press for is the acceptance of homosexual clergy in the churches. And you can imagine how powerful a symbol this would become. And the United Methodist Church, along with the other denominations in what are traditionally called the mainline Protestant churches, the United Methodist Church has been embroiled in controversy over the issue of homosexuality for the better part of 3 decades. Just in recent days, the Judicial Council of the United Methodist Church has defrocked an openly homosexual woman from service as an ordained minister. In this case, the church took this action against Irene Elizabeth Stroud, who had served as a pastor of a United Methodist Church in Pennsylvania. She announced in 2003 to her congregation that she was a practicing lesbian, and this story really gets convoluted because she did so while a PBS film crew was doing a documentary about liberal Protestantism, and they just happened to be at her church at that time. She was found guilty of violating the church's discipline, but later a court of appeal within the United Methodist Church reversed that conviction, and it said that, for instance, the wording of the Book of Discipline in the United Methodist Church was unclear. It is not unclear in any way. There can be no legitimate claim that it is unclear. And the Judicial Council, which is, in effect, the Supreme Court of the United Methodist Church, ruled in favor of the church's discipline. And what this Judicial Council of the United Methodist Church really did was to affirm that words have meaning and that the text has authority and that the church has the right to establish the boundaries of its own behavior and what it will accept in ministers and its expectations of those who will receive the ordination of the church. Now, this is a controversy that is surely to unfold in weeks and months ahead because this will lead to a battle, and the next time the United Methodist Church meets for a general conference, you can count on another challenge to the church's policy. But we need to be thankful that in this case, a denomination upheld its own principles, it stood by its own laws, and it stands here on biblical authority. And that is nothing to be winked at these days and nothing to be missed. It's really important for all of us. It's very easy, if we're not United Methodists, to say, well, that's not our church, that's not our denomination, so it's not our business. Well, just as no man is an island, no church, no denomination is an island, and we need to pray for each other. This is a reminder to all of us. We need to pray for other churches and other denominations that they would be lashed to the Word of God, and that they would be constrained by the Christian conscience, and that they would live up to the expectations of the laws and principles they derive from the Word of God. And this is a reminder to us of just how pressing these cases are. Now, there was another case that is even more interesting, I think, that was handled by this same church court on the same day. And that had to do with a pastor in Virginia who was taken away from his post because he refused to accept an openly homosexual man as a member of the church. In other words, he said that the church's discipline calls for the homosexuality be recognized as a sin. This man was practicing this sin and was not repentant of this sin. He did not come and say, I want to be made right with God in terms of bringing my sin, like everyone else brings sin, to Christ. Instead, he said he intended to continue as an active practicing homosexual, and he still wanted to join the church. The local jurisdiction here, the bishop in Virginia, had removed this man from his pastorate, but the Supreme Judicial Council of the United Methodist Church reinstated him. The New York Times is surely right in its news story out this morning, suggesting that this case is probably even more important than the case of the defrocked minister from Pennsylvania, and it will bear watching because this is a major signal sent by one of our largest denominations. Folks, are you aware how many teenagers and college students are out there writing weblogs known as blogs? They're writing these basically as personal diaries. And there is a lot of exposure and danger in it. USA Today, in a news story out yesterday, in the front page of its Life section, gets right to the heart of the challenge here. You have teenagers and young people who are posting to the public intimate details of their own lives. My wife and I were talking about this just yesterday. Sometimes it looks like these kids are writing diaries, and instead of locking it away and hiding it from their little brothers, they're actually putting it out on the World Wide Web where virtually anyone can see it, and it's leading to a lot of pain, and it's a lot of vulnerability here, too. We're living in a day in which we really don't want our identities and the details of our lives, and especially of our young ones, out there for public view. With address and telephone number and picture and all the rest, you can just imagine how all the wrong people could be attracted to looking to these kinds of online diaries. And whether it's Zynga or Facebook or many of these other kinds of blog services, an awful lot of parents are just unaware of what's going on. Folks, find out if your teenager has a weblog, a blog, and read it. We need to protect our kids even from themselves and sometimes even from their friends, and we certainly need to protect them from some forms of technology that bring all new forms of vulnerability into their lives. Well, there are serious proposals being made today that the record books in professional baseball need to be rewritten, at least edited, so that asterisks are put beside those who took anabolic steroids. In a lot of classrooms today, in colleges and universities, some of the students are doping themselves up with drugs in order to enhance their memory and sharpen their minds. Is there anything wrong with this? Is human enhancement just the wave of the future? Are we just going to get better at it with more products available? We're going to be talking about it when we come back. Coast to Coast, you're listening to the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The use of psychostimulants and other enhancement drugs is becoming more and more widespread. The big question is this: should human beings accept certain limitations in terms of cognitive ability and physical strength? You know, there are a lot of people who say no. When it comes to taking anabolic steroids, it's becoming routine among many sports and athletes, sports figures. It's becoming a crisis. Just in recent days, two United States senators have initiated new legislation that would put further boundaries and regulations on baseball in order to check the use of anabolic steroids. But the new thing, and this is off the screen of most people and certainly most parents, the new thing is the use of certain psychostimulants by students, those who aren't looking so much to enhance athletic ability as intellectual ability. Recent article at Tech Central Station by Arnold Kling makes the point. He says this: perhaps the last unenhanced human to make a significant contribution to the field of mathematics has already been born. In 20 years, the tenure track at top university mathematics departments may consist entirely of people who depend on drugs, direct neural computer connections, genetic modification, or a combination of all three in order to achieve high-level performance. Now, Mr. Kling is onto something here. What he's talking about is the fact that among graduate students and professors in fields like physics and mathematics, as well as other fields, there are students who are beginning to take these psychostimulants in order to enhance their cognitive ability. Some are taking them in order to cram for an exam. Others are beginning to take them on an almost daily basis. There is a heritage to this, a pattern that goes pretty far back in terms of our culture. Paul Erdos, a Nobel Prize-winning mathematician, admitted to using some of these psychostimulants in order to continue his work. He used the drug Benzedrine, which was often used as a decongestant. He used it in order to stimulate his mind. At one point, he was given a challenge by a friend to do without the drug for 30 days, and Erdos found that his productivity plummeted, and he didn't want to give up the drug. Now, there are those in the literary world who have also used these kinds of drugs, and that won't surprise you, but some of the people who have used them included Hemingway and Jack Kerouac and others of the beatniks, the beat generation, who used some of these drugs, and that was attributed, at least in part, to their literary output. The existentialist philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre, the author Graham Greene, and Philip Dick, the poet W.H. Auden, they all used Benzedrine. But, you know, at that point, it was something of kind of a counterculture. What really scares us is that now this is moving with enhanced drugs into America's schools, and not just colleges and universities. You know, educators are detecting the use of Adderall and Ritalin among students who have not been diagnosed with AHAD or any other similar malady, but they're getting these drugs simply for the stimulant effect and the improvement in terms of attentiveness and memory and cognition. Now, folks, we all remember what it was like to try to remember where we read something as we're getting ready to have to write a paper. We remember how difficult it is sometimes to pull up a fact when we're getting ready to take a test. Wouldn't it be nice just to be able to pop a pill and find that all those facts flow freely? That logic is what's affecting a lot of young people. And, of course, why not? We live in a society that increasingly says if you have a problem, pop a pill. And just on this program in recent days, I was talking about the fact that we now have a fourfold increase in the use of sleeping pills among teenagers and children, and it's believed that many of these sleeping pills are now required because these kids are doped up on stimulants during the day. And the very fact that they're taking these psychostimulants means they have to have some way to come down. Well, what are we buying into here? That's the big question. The phone number is 877-893-8255. It's 877-893-TALK. Here's the big question. Should we accept certain limits to what it means to be human? Or should we continue to press the envelope? Should we take the pill or accept the technology or go after the genetic modification that will make us live longer, that will make us run faster, that will make us think faster and with greater attentiveness? Should we do whatever it could take in order to seize a technology that would give us a longer memory, a better memory? Should we look for greater artistic expression and all the rest? You know, I think we as Christians have a distinctive take on this question. Because after all, we're the people who don't believe that human beings are merely the highly evolved product of naturalistic processes. We believe that human beings are the creature that is uniquely made in the image of God. And we believe that our intellectual powers, our very consciousness, including our conscience, that these are testimonies to the fact that we are made in God's image. And God, in doing so, made us as the only creature who could know him. Are there any natural limits to humanity that we should not try to exceed? There are big questions here. I mean, after all, just look in the drug catalogs. Just listen to the advertisements on primetime television. There are people who are now selling drugs in order to enhance your sex life, in order to make you run faster, in order to make you feel better, and all these things. But a lot of it is really a rush to try to press the envelope of what it means to be human. Should we expect the humans will run as fast as a cheetah? Should we expect the humans will one day be as strong as an elephant? Should we believe that human beings should be all Albert Einsteins, even if we have to give each other drugs and we have to go after the modification of the human genome and try to selectively breed human beings for that process? I think what we're seeing here is a dehumanizing of humanity. And I really worry about what it would mean for kids to grow up in a culture in which they feel like they just can't make the team if they don't take the steroids. Or they feel like they just can't make the grade if they don't take Adderall or Ritalin or some psychostimulant. I wonder what we're saying to our own kids. The phone number is 877-893-8255. I'd love to hear what you think about this. I believe right now there's some parents out there who are aware that your own kids are probably struggling with some of these questions. You know, there are university students. And I can understand the temptation. Look, you can improve your grade. You can markedly improve your retention and your memory if you just take this drug. Well, what happens when you don't have the drug? And what happens when you come off of the drug? And what happens when you become dependent upon the drug? Those are all big questions. The phone number 877-893-TALK. You know, you start looking at this claim made by Arnold Kling, and I found it a question that really, really reached my conscience. It really made me think, have we now reached the point where we see the last Nobel Prize winner in mathematics who hasn't won the prize with the assistance of drugs? Well, for that matter, we know that some of them in the past, at least in the recent past, may have been drug-assisted in terms of their own work and their own productivity. You know, the claims that we need to go back to the baseball record books and put in some asterisks make sense to me. Are we really going to compare Babe Ruth's 714 home runs? Are we really going to compare what he did at the polo fields in New York with what we see in terms of the record breakers today? You know, does it matter that they're taking steroids? Does it matter that they've used these kinds of technologies to enhance their strength and agility? What about the Olympics? Is it true that human beings are really getting faster and faster? Are we really getting better and better and stronger? Or is it really not about health at all, but about the use of pharmaceuticals and other technologies to really create a whole new humanity, a drug-induced, drug-enhanced humanity? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Do we as Christians have any particular take on this question? Do we have any particular angle of understanding? Well, let's put it this way. The water hits the wheel when you answer the question. If your daughter or your son had the opportunity to take this drug, would you encourage them to do so? The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back, folks. The use of these performance-enhancing drugs may not be completely new, but the widespread temptation among college students to use them is a fairly recent development. Writer Joshua Four of Slate.com decided to take Adderall for a week in order to see how the drug worked. His report was that the results were miraculous. He said that in terms of improvement to intelligence, memory, cognitive processing speed, and alertness, he said he felt, quote, like I'd been bitten by a radioactive spider. That's quite a picture. He said when he tried writing on the drug, quote, it was like I had a choir of angels sitting on my shoulders. I became almost mechanical in my ability to pump out sentences. Of course, he also writes about what it was like to come off the drug, and that was not so pleasant an experience. Folks, would you take such a drug? Would you want your kids to take these drugs? Are you arming them to think through these big questions before they find themselves in a college classroom, or more likely in a college dormitory where someone's going to pass these out? And used to be worried about drug pushers pushing the kind of narcotics that were popular on campuses years ago. That's still a threat. But is it any less of a threat that it's one of these prescription psychostimulants that that is now being passed out, $10 to $15 a pill, promising a night of great studying, perhaps cramming for an exam and a better grade tomorrow? The phone number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Malcolm calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome, Malcolm.
Hello, Dr. Mohler. I just wanted to let you know that when I was in high school, I went to a very small school and I played football. And the larger schools around had tremendous programs. And then the only way that I was going to be able to compete, at least at that time, I thought, was to have some edge by which I could participate and compete on the same plane. And so I bought into the myth of the anabolic steroids, and I'm telling you that it although they work, there are some things that I think a lot of people don't think about, things that it does to you that you don't anticipate. And ultimately, I think in my mind, ultimately, I think it came down to the fact was I was trying to improve self. I was trying to improve what I was doing, and I wasn't thinking about what God intended for me to be. Now, I was not a Christian then, so I'm talking about this in retrospect. But we have to think about what God designed us for us to be. What pleases God, and how do we look at it from that perspective? And I did not have that view when I was using those. But I just wanted to put that in there because I think that's the way, I think that's the view that needs to be taken. Are we really out to satisfy ourselves? Are we really out to improve selves, which ultimately is focusing on self rather than what God designed for us to be and wants our lives to be for Him?
Yeah, Malcolm, I think that's such an excellent point. I want you to hang with me here. Don't hang up. I want to come back to you with a question because I really appreciate your personal testimony about this. And you're exactly right. I think it does come down to some big questions. I don't think God intends for us all to be the same. I mean, if we all just take the right amount of these drugs, maybe we'll all just be exactly the same. I think there are people who have tremendous athletic ability and there are people who have less. I'm on the less side of that category. I think there are people that have tremendous intellectual ability and great reading ability and processing ability. There's some people who have less. Now, obviously, you know, if someone's sick, I don't have a problem with giving them an antibiotic. And, you know, if someone's hurt, you know, let's give them the drugs if they're available and can be ethically used in order to bring them back to a status of health. But are we really talking about human enhancement, you know, going beyond our natural potential? I think that's the big question. Malcolm, I wanted to take you back to when you were a teenager and when you wanted to make that football team and you wanted to play, you know, you must have really faced a lot of temptation to take that drug.
Well, I didn't look at it as temptation at that time. I just didn't see it that way. What I saw it as was a way to put myself in a position to be able to compete on a plane that otherwise I could not have competed on.
Yeah, I think that's the temptation, though. I think the temptation is there are a lot of kids out there who say, you know, I want to make the team. I want to wear the jersey. I want to get the ring. I want to make the record. I want to catch the touchdown. I want to win the girl. You know, I want the whole package. And if it means I'm going to put my future health somewhat at risk out there where teenagers really aren't too concerned about the future anyway, you know, the risk seems very small against the promise of gain. And, of course, we're talking here just about the anabolic steroids that Malcolm referenced, but it's also true about the use of psychostimulants. And that's the big new thing, where a lot of parents who haven't worried about their kids because they're not perhaps in the athletic arena, they need to be worried now. The phone number, 877-893-8255. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about the use of psychostimulants and other enhancement drugs. And the big question, you know, are we really pressing the envelope of what it means to be human? Do we as Christians have any particular concern about this? I think we do. Let's go to Angela calling from Meridian, Mississippi, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Angela, you're up.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Glad to hear from you.
Thank you for taking my call. My son is ADHD, and he is on Adderall. And I did have him extensively tested, where they even observed in the classroom, and have a very, very conservative pediatrician that's been practiced about 40 years, and he does not like to put a child on medicine at all. But in this case, he saw no other choice.
Mm-hmm.
I have taken my son off the medicine at different points in time, and he started failing in the classroom. So don't want to keep him on it, but he can't make the grades. And, of course, you know, the classrooms are so much bigger now where they have about 35 children in one classroom, and the teaching has changed. There's no hands-on anymore and no stimulation for them to, you know, not get bored real quick or to keep their focus.
And how old is your son?
13.
And he's a boy. I mean, let's also recognize that. God did not make boys to sit in a classroom happily. And I'm the father of a 13-year-old son myself, Angela, so I know what they're like. For that matter, I was one, so I know what they're like. And, you know, that's just no matter how even academically inclined the kid is, it's still not a natural environment in the classroom. Now, you raised the issue of ADHD, and I want to come back and say we could do a whole program on that and perhaps need to one day, and, you know, about the controversies about that particular diagnosis. But, you know, what I want to focus on this program is even the use of these drugs that are being routinely prescribed for people with that diagnosis who are now using them far beyond. That is, the people who do not have that diagnosis and wouldn't even claim to have ADHD, whatever that is in terms of some diagnoses, they're taking it simply because they'll do better on a test. Angela, I pray the Lord's blessing on you and your son. And let me just say right up front, I am not a medical doctor. So I'm not talking about medical advice here. I'm trying to look at this from a Christian worldview perspective. You know, are we redefining what it means? And I think Angela's call helps us to focus on one very key question here. You know, I think most of us would make a moral distinction between the use of a drug to return a person to some kind of normal operating capacity versus the use of a drug to enhance that capacity. And I think just honesty requires us to say that I think that is a distinction. I'm not sure it's a perfect distinction. But, you know, if we have someone who has an injury, we would understand the need for them to be to recover, the need to do many things, perhaps to help them to recover from drugs and physical therapy and surgery and all the rest. But is it a different thing altogether? Well, let me give you an example. We began by talking about Babe Ruth and his home run records. What about Major League Baseball pitchers? Do you know that there are some pitchers who are having surgery now that done on their forearm and the musculature and the ligaments so as to turn the wrist slightly inward that gives them slightly more strength? I understand it's called tension strength in order to pitch. Now, you see, I wonder if that's not a violation of the Hippocratic Oath. I mean, what is the ethical justification for doing surgery on a healthy arm in order to change the musculature just to enhance pitching strength? Well, if it's a pitching arm today, what's it going to be tomorrow? Athletes coming in to have their leg muscles reshaped to enable them to sprint? Are they then going to be crippled in old age? I mean, there are all kinds of ethical issues involved here. Let's go to Jim calling from Floyd Knobs, Indiana. Jim, it's your turn.
Good evening, Dr. Moeller. My position is this is a prime example of you reap what you sow. We as parents, we raise our children that, you know, my son, he's the best basketball player. He's the smartest kid in his class. He's the best looking kid in his class. So we as parents are setting the objective, the goal so high that our kids, as they mature and as they grow, there's no way that they in their own minds can ever achieve that bar that we've put in place for them. Artificial means is the only way that they can remain the best athlete for dad and for mom and the smartest son for mom and dad.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's the parents' role to be complimentary of our kids, to raise their self-esteem, but it also help them to understand what the real world is about. They're not always going to be the best looking. They're not always going to be the best student or athlete. But in our eyes, they're always our sons. They're always our daughters, immaterial of their successes or their failures.
Yeah, Jim, what an important word. And I'm really thankful you made that point so well. And I would just want to add to that the fact that what we should encourage our children to do and raise them to do is to seek God's glory in their lives and to seek to be the very finest man or woman God would call them to be, most faithful and most devoted to Christ. And, you know, that's far more important than what's going to get in the record books. That's far more important than who wins, frankly, the big athletic prizes at the Olympics or the Nobel Prizes in intellect. In the kingdom of God, that is not going to be what is most important. And I think we do need to remember that. Thanks for your call, Jim. Let's go to Josh, listening on WFIA-FM. Josh, your turn.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to briefly touch on, I mean, I'm a facilities director for two of the largest athletic clubs in the Louisville metro area. And I not only see that it's the college students and the adults that are using these enhancements, it's also primarily high school kids in our area that are using these enhancements, and I see them using not just the pharmaceutical grade, but also the weight gainers and the creatines that are the over-the-counter dietary supplements. And I see them definitely having heart attacks at 18, 19 years old, and it's a tragedy that their role models are promoting these things, and they fall victim to them.
Josh, thank you for that call from the front lines. We need to hear it. And I think there are a lot of parents who perhaps don't even want to hear what you're saying because they don't want to face the truth. And they may not want to know what Johnny's got in the drug in the drug counter or in the cabinet or in his backpack because he just wants to make the grade. Thanks for that call, Josh. Let's go to Angie calling from Holiday, Florida, listening on WTBN. Angie, we're glad to hear from you. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling because I have actually – I take Adderall.
Uh-huh.
I originally got off of pain addiction pills, and they put me on Adderall as a stimulant to help me think straighter, so on and so forth. And I am in the healthcare, and I have to say that medication is just given out way too freely these days.
Well, Angie, that is an important word to hear, you know, and I think that last few words you said, those are very important. Medicines, pills are just given out far too freely these days. Someone's got to call a halt to it. And it's not just the drug pusher. In this case, it's doctors as well sometimes who are pushing these things. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. This has been an interesting discussion, the use of psychostimulants, anabolic steroids, and other enhancement pharmaceuticals. I hope this awakens at least some parents and perhaps some students as well. I speak about this as an academic president, and I know the kind of pressures that are put on students. I know the kind of pressures that are put on them sometimes by parents, sometimes by friends, and sometimes just by themselves. They want to do well, and I want them to do well. But, you know, when it comes down to it, I want them to do as well as they can do. I guess that's the formula I'm really looking for here. I want them to do as well as they can using the capacities that God has given them. I don't want students rushing to the pharmacy counter, going down to the pusher on the corner, or accepting a pill from their friends because using this is supposedly going to give them some great enhancement. Now, let me be honest with you as well. Close at hand here as I'm doing this program is a cup of black coffee. And there's caffeine in there. And, you know, there are ways in which you can process caffeine, and you can sell it, and you'll find this down at the gas station, at the truck stop, or wherever. Go pills, which you can take, you know, loaded with caffeine. But, you know, the problem with that is you're going to come off of it. And when you come off of it, you're going to return to normal. And sometimes when you come off of it, you'll come down lower than you were, just in terms of normal operation. Any use of drugs upon which we become dependent like this, it creates a dependence on a drug when we should be dependent upon Christ. And this really reminds us that as Christians, we're called not to be the very best that we can be. We're called to be the very best that we can be for the glory of God, for the sake of Christ. And we are to understand that whatever capacities we have are not our own. They're not ours to hone or to enhance by the use of technology or pharmaceuticals. They are ours only at the disposal of the Lord Jesus Christ. We as Christians understand that God has a distinctive purpose not only for humanity as the only species made in his own image, the only creature bearing his image, but also for each individual. And we as believers in Christ need to transcend these questions and think of it not just in terms of personal enhancement and a whatever the cost economy, but we need to look at it in terms of total availability for the glory of God. We want to do well. We want our kids to do well. We ought to encourage each other to do well. We need to discipline ourselves. We need to work. We need to practice. We need to do all those things that we know help us, whether it's in athletics or in academics. But we know that there's something fundamentally wrong when you've got college students out there taking pills just to be able to cram for a test, and when you've got high school athletes taking steroids just in order to make the team. We're the people who have to say no when the whole world appears to be saying yes. Join me tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. You set the agenda. I'll meet you there.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.